Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, come on, come on. Yeah, hey Cheryl, hit him with some background vocals, baby. That's it, that's it. Come on, from the J to the A, the capital V, the O double N with the silent E. Just chilling, maximizing creativity. Down in the basement is where I will be, especially when I'm hanging home alone, creating new beats, rocking the microphone. When I start something new, you know it's on, like brunch in the basement with Javon. Come on, just clap your hands. Come on, when I start something new, you know it's on, like brunch in the basement with Javon. Come on, come on. Yes, when I start something new, you know it's on, like brunch in the basement with Javon. Yeah, let's start something new. Let's do it now.
Hey, everybody, I want to welcome you to another episode of Brunch in the Basement with Javon. Today, we have the Archbishop, Carl Bean, joining us today. Obviously, some may or may not know, he was supposed to be our very first guest, but things happen in the order in which they are supposed to occur. This month will mark Archbishop's 70th birthday, and I'm so pleased, so honored that he would actually spend time with us today during that month, and maybe we can celebrate him with your calls, with your comments. I tried to launch a chat room here, but it didn't pop up, but that's okay. What we can do is on the Facebook page, there are two Facebook pages that you can place a message for the Archbishop, and I will let him know, or he might even be able to see it himself, as he has been in the event page on Facebook entitled Archbishop Carl Bean is joining us for brunch in the basement with Javon. So you can put a comment there. You can call in. The number is 347-826-7536. You have to press 1 in order to be heard. Or you can like, and I'm hoping that you do like, the In the Basement with Javon page, where all of our shows and all of our guests have photos, and you can make comments there. So also, I just wanted to let you know, a little housekeeping, that after this show, I will be taking off for 2 weeks, and then I will be coming back, we will be coming back on May 31st, I believe, is the next show that we will be doing live. So I hope that you listen to some archive shows while we're off, and yeah, you know, and also let us know what you think about the show. I normally give everything a 90-day period, you know. I try things out for 90 days and see how I feel about it. And this show marks the third month, the 90th day, so to speak, of the Brunch in the Basement with Javon show. So let me know how we're doing, and you can also put that on Facebook as well. As normal, I'm going to be playing some music, and the music that we'll be playing today is mostly uplifting gospel-type music. Now, not just your normal gospel music by gospel artists, but we will be playing music by Unity Fellowship Movement, either members or people who have graced us with their presence, have been at some point a part of the congregation. Also, I'm going to be playing some gospel or uplifting music, spiritual music, by people who are known as R&B legends or R&B singers and so forth and so on. But the first song I want to hear is a song that I actually just listened to today by a young lady you may know as Tanya. I know her as China Doll, and I believe she's come through Unity.
And I want to play Cleanse Me. This song is so beautiful. So just to get us in the right mood, here's China Doll with Cleanse Me.
That was Cleanse Me by China Doll. And it's so funny. China's like, how do I listen? Well, China, you're supposed to ask me that before we play. You know, you're supposed to have been listening to me, girl. But I'll make sure you get to hear it. Right now, we're going to find out what's going on in the world with none other than Nathan James. And now, what's going on with Nathan James?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Nathan James, and here's what's going on. The Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City was filled with pomp and circumstance as the stars came out last Saturday for the 25th annual GLAAD Media Awards. Celebrating a quarter century of progress of the Watchdogs Group monitoring of the depiction of the LGBT community in the entertainment industry, the various celebrities and other notables stepped out onto the red carpet with their pride and all of their fabulousness showing. George Takei, who received the signature Vito Russo Award, referred to GLAAD as a powerful force for change and has transformed the media by taking on the formidable beast and changing the way that the LGBT community has been looked at by the general public. Takei said, "The media previously had stripped us of all humanity and made us into a pathetic stereotype, but GLAAD changed all that." Among the many notables that were on hand for the festivities were Cabot College star and out comedian Fortune Feimster, who hosted the GLAAD Awards, Tamron Hall, MSNBC anchor, Noah's Ark star and GLAAD national spokesman Wilson Cruz, the cast of Orange is the New Black, including sensation Laverne Cox, pop icon Boy George, and recently out basketball player Derek Gordon from the UMass Minutemen. The new president of GLAAD, Sarah Kate Ellis, made an impassioned speech about her role with the organization and said that everyone she saw in the audience is a warrior in the fight for equality. It's decision day today in the NFL draft for Michael Sam, who came out to his team and to the general public earlier this year. Michael Sam, who is the defensive player of the year in the league's Southeastern Conference, is going through round 4 through 7 today in the NFL draft to see if he will be selected by a team to play in the famous football league. Sam, who is 6'2" and 260 pounds, is a defensive linebacker, and he might end up as an undrafted free agent, but there were 530 other undrafted free agents on the NFL roster at the last week of the last season. Former Minnesota Vikings punter Chris Cluay says if Sam isn't drafted today, it will be fair to ask if his sexual orientation is the reason why. In historical news, today is National Train Day, celebrating 145 years since the driving of the Golden Spike at Promontory Point, Utah, which completed the Transcontinental Railroad. The ceremony, which took place amongst many dignitaries and which was witnessed by United States President Ulysses S. Grant, marked the change in commerce, trade, and social connections throughout the world by connecting the world's two hemispheres. I'm Nathan James, and that's what's going on.
Hey, Nathan. Thank you for that update. I'm also wondering about the Nigerian young ladies who have been kidnapped. Do you know anything that's going on with them? Any updates?
Yes, the authorities in Nigeria have in fact taken one suspect into custody and are chasing after several more. The abductions, which have made international headlines, have not produced any significant other new clues, but it is hoped that through interrogation of the primary suspect that the young women will be found and that the kidnappings will end.
Thank you so much, Nathan. Now, are you going to hang out and say hello to the Archbishop when he comes on?
Yes, I may return to the show. I'm trying to get some other things done, but I may very well call back because I'm very much interested in speaking with him as well.
Yes, isn't he wonderful? He is. I mean, when you think about how many lives he's touched just by him saying yes, just by saying that God is love and love is for everyone, I mean, gee. That's so simple and yet so profound.
Yes, it is. And he really does set an example of all the wonderful things that a church can do when it remembers that message you just mentioned, that God is love.
Yeah, yeah. So, Nathan, whatever you do today, enjoy it. And hopefully you'll come back and say hi later.
Thank you, Javon. You have a wonderful day, too.
I'm sure I will. Thank you, hon. All right.
Right now, I want to play one of the R&B artists that I was saying, you know, one of the things I wanted to do today was play some R&B artists doing a little gospel thing, and so, or a little spiritual thing. And right now, I'm going to play Outkast, In Due Time.
They got my knuckles bleeding from crawling. Got these thinking they really ballin' when they isn't. Don't take my word, it's off in prison. That will tell you that's locked up for a long time and won't sell you no flex. So congregation, will you turn your text to the book about cast? Chapter 2, verse 1, the first one to feel me. Jump up and make a joyful noise, you've outcast it. Meaning, now you have a choice like that.
Yeah, that was Outkast with In Due Time. Right now, I'm going to go to a caller. Your last four digits are 1488.
Oh,
what's
that's
your name?
Me. Alexis.
Alexis. How you doing, Alexis P. Suda?
I'm good. I'm really good. How are you?
I'm groovy, baby. I am so groovy. And I see that you're a little excited about our guest today.
Yes, Javon, I am.
Yeah, you know, that would be amazing if you remade some of his music, man. That would be crazy.
Oh, that song that I heard on your page today, it really spoke to me. And, you know, some stuff that I'm going through right now in my life. And I was like, wow. You know, that song was done in 74. Here it is, 2004. I'm just hearing it, and it really resonated with my soul. You know, it really, I got to do it.
Yeah, man. I think, you know, well, from what I know of the Archbishop, I believe he would be 100% behind you doing that, man.
I love him, man. I really would appreciate it if he could let me do it, because I would definitely start getting on that right away, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And I could hear it as soon as you say, "Oh, I want to do that." I could hear you singing it, man. That'd be great. What you up to these days? What's coming up next for you?
Oh man, I got a lot of stuff coming up. This week I'm off, which I'm really glad about, you know, because I needed a little rest. And but sometimes I get a little restless when I have a lot of time, and then I have to sit in the reality of what is sometimes, you know, when I'm on the road and I'm singing, I don't have to deal with a lot of stuff that goes on, you know. You know, I just thank God that I'm moving forward, and I got a lot of shows coming up. My next show is in Spring Gulch, New Holland, PA. And then after that, every weekend, after that to the end of the summer, I'm doing something. So the new album will be out in July. And
nice.
I'm just being patient, learning new stuff and going over stuff and just being patient. That's all I can do.
That's cool. You know what? For people who don't know who Alexis P. Souter is, she's an amazing blues, gospel, house music, R&B, whatever is put before her to sing type artist.
thank you.
I'm gonna try to put you on the spot just a little bit. I gotta do it, man. you remember when we had that concert in New Brunswick and you got up and you sang for us?
Yeah.
Could you give us a couple of licks of it?
Oh, you funny.
Live in real time?
What did I do? I won't complain?
I won't complain.
Oh, wow. All right. I've had some good days. Yeah. I've had some hills to climb. I've had some weary days and some lonely nights. But when I look around and think life, think things over, all of my good days, I weigh my bad days, I won't complain. That was good for you?
That was, wow, man. Wow. Thank you so much. And now that could be something that I could just keep playing at you right here. And thank you so much, Lexi.
Oh, you're welcome. You're good.
Love you so much. So please hang out. And when the Archbishop comes back on, or when he comes on, rather, you'll be the first to say hello to him.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much, Alexis. And thank you
for your
ongoing support of this show.
Oh, forever. I got your back. I know you got mine. Yeah,
I know you
sure.
Do. And mm-hmm. I want you to let me know when you're going to be performing places, where you're going to be performing. And the least I could do is just make an announcement about it here on the show.
Okay.
So, you know, you inbox me your information, and then on Saturdays as it comes up, I'll just announce it. You're getting some free promo right here in the basement.
Oh,
because I love you, baby.
I love you back.
You know what? You support me, I support you. That's the way it goes. You know,
absolutely.
People looking out at me from the side of their faces, but, yo, you don't support me, you know, how am I supposed to know how to support you?
Right.
What I'm saying?
How
would I know what you're doing if you ain't just tell me, if you ain't call in and let me know?
Right.
I mean, that's how we make the world go round, right?
Right. Absolutely. God,
so that's
thank
what's up.
You
keep me updated, and I'll keep the world updated as best as I can.
Yes, absolutely.
Just hang on, baby. Hang on.
I sure will.
That was dope. Alexis P. Suter just sang live on my show. Wow. And it just shows me that I'm still being blessed. This is not actually an R&B singer singing some gospel, but this is one of my favorite gospel songs. It's by Dietrich Haddon. God didn't give up on me. And, you know, I'm just feeling that way right now. As bad as I could be sometimes, God still didn't give up on me.
Oh, 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 okay. Paper the other day about a preacher who fell from grace. He begged the church for forgiveness. He realized he made a mistake. And some folks left the church and said, "You're supposed to be a man of the cloth." See, they forgot he was the same man that prayed for them when they were lost. So glad God is not like won't throw you away after you've done wrong, but I'll pick you up and dust you off and put you back where you belong. God didn't give up on me. I'm so glad. God, yeah, give up on me. When I gave up, now it's easy to point the finger when the spotlight's not on you. Well, and we will be surprised what we see if the truth come out on you. And you need to show a little mercy and grace for somebody else. And take your foot off your brother and consider yourself. I'm glad God has done like never let it fall.
Hey, yeah, that was God Didn't Give Up On Me, one of my favorite gospel songs. And right now, we're gonna actually have one of my favorite intimacy and sexuality coaches come on, and her name is Mika Ray. Hey, Mika.
Hey, Javon. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, sweetheart?
I'm okay. Thank you for asking.
Just okay? You're usually great.
I am more than great.
Are you feeling blessed today?
I'm feeling very blessed.
Because
and
you
how
know.
Are you feeling?
I'm feeling blessed, too. I am certainly feeling blessed. Blessed to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. I'm blessed to be here.
So what you got for us today, sweetheart?
Well, speaking of blessings and just to kind of surround the topic of today, I wanted to make sure I talk about spirituality in relationships. And you may not be – I feel like a couple, even if they are not experiencing the same level of spirituality, as long as they have a great understanding of each other, you know, the difference in their spirituality, I feel like you can still be equally yoked. That's just how I feel. And you have some people that may be into the church and to the Baptist, and they want to go and jump around a little bit, clap their hands a little bit, but then you have some that may want to just meditate and become one with the universe, and that's their spiritual base. And I don't feel like there's a right or wrong way. My biggest concern would be a couple who's experiencing a difference because one doesn't believe in any or doesn't have any type of spiritual base at all, and they may ridicule or down the person that does have it. That's when I feel like you're unequally yoked. When you have one person that's spiritually based and the other one who's not. And I just think it's important to identify your spiritual base because it helps lead to your values, how you treat people, the way you want to be treated. It gives you something to hold on to when the times are bad or even when you're not feeling well. You have some people that go to prayer, or you have the people that go toward meditating or journaling. So
yes.
That's basically what I wanted to say today. How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, Mika, one wonderful thing in my own relationship is that we are equally yoked. And I don't know how we would be together this long. We're coming up on 10 years this year.
Mm-hmm.
10 years together. And I don't know that if we were not equally yoked that we would still be together in harmony. There's
mm-hmm.
some couples that stay together that just kind of stay together. But
all
we
right.
are in tune with each other. You know, we believe similarly, and we respect those things that are not similar about one another, you know? So,
right.
you know, I think that it's important that even if you are involved with someone who doesn't praise the way that you praise, which is okay, you know, but that there's a mutual respect.
Right.
And understanding is very important. You know, like, it's one thing for me to say, okay, I respect you. You know, you could do what you want to do. But also, I understand why I may not praise that way. I may not feel that way. I may not believe that way. But I understand why you do. I get you. You got to be gotten. You want to be gotten by your partner, right?
Right. You want to be understood.
Mm-hmm.
And respected, as you said. And spirituality is such a tough thing. And even if we just take it on another level and talk about spirituality in same-sex relationships, it can be a very tough thing because a lot of people do not know how a lot of lesbian or gay males do not know how to reconcile their spirituality with their sexuality.
Right.
And that's a whole nother topic we can talk about one day. But you have to think about those things because you can still be have a spiritual foundation and not, you know, be in turmoil about who you are as a person.
Right.
But it's very important, and it's necessary. It's a serious topic, I think. And some people have grown up a certain way, thinking a certain way, believing a certain way, and as they become older, their thoughts change towards spirituality only because of because you've become something now and you don't know how to express it or utilize it in a positive manner.
Right. It's true.
Yeah.
We have a caller. Let's see what the caller has to say.
Sure.
3935, you're holding? What's your name and where you calling
from? Yes, I'm holding. Hello. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Who's calling?
Oh, this is Henry from Texas.
Hey, Henry from Texas.
Hey,
what's going
Henry.
On? Did you hear the topic?
Yes, I did. And, you know, it's a great topic. I just had my 5th-year anniversary yesterday.
Oh,
and,
congratulations.
That same opposite of track is my situation because my wife is very spiritual. She's actually at her church now, and I'm not. No, we're spiritually connected, but it's two different types of beliefs we have, and we've been married and living that way. And God has blessed us because she has her God and her beliefs, and I have mine.
Right. I like that. That's a great example of what we were talking about.
Yeah, and I respect her choice. She respects mine, you know. And it's working out so far. We had a wonderful time yesterday. So
we're
just like best friends. We only got married after knowing each other for 6 months. So the first 2 years we spent getting to know each other, and we kind of got lucky and it worked. I guess it's because of our age. We got married in our 40s. Late
40s. Well, that's a blessing. Any relationship that works is a blessing. And that you're equally yoked, that's certainly a blessing. You know?
Yeah,
that you get each other.
When you're equal, like you said, Javon, when you're equally, you know, in tune with each other, you have more fun, you know, because I'm doing my thing and she's doing her thing, you know, because, you know, that's her thing, and my thing is my thing. But when you're equally on the same link, you're synced together, I believe it could be a lot more fun.
Yeah.
You know?
Did you have any questions for Mika?
Well, no, not really. I'm just right now I'm in listening mode. I'm enjoying the conversation, you know, and I'm supporting your show. Maybe if I had knew a little bit more about her, I would probably have. But, you know, I'm getting a good vibe. Sounds very funny. Knows what she's talking about, and it's a great topic.
Right. Well, you just keep holding on, and you keep listening, and you may want to call back or press 1 again because the Archbishop Carl Bean is coming on, and there's a lot to be learned from him as well.
Okay.
And thank you so much, Henry, for supporting the show.
Always.
Love you, baby.
Always. Love you, too.
Right.
Bye, Mika.
Bye. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Well, Javon, I want to make sure that people know But I'm so glad, first I'll say this, I'm so glad he called in, because I think people get the idea wrong that when they hear equally yoked, it has to be, well, we believe in the same thing, we're doing the same thing, we go to church together. But you can have a very successful, healthy relationship even if you do not go to church together.
True. Absolutely true.
As long as you respect each other's beliefs, you understand each other, and you have your own foundation that helps guide your behavior in the relationship.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah. And make sure, I mean, he needs to make sure where he can look me up. So I want people to know they can go to mekarae.com to learn more about. Sorry.
Hello? Hello? Mika? Okay, I think I lost you. But also, you can find Mika at Intomate. That's Intomate _consultant. If you just Google Mika Ray, you'll find her. I don't know where she went, but hopefully she'll call back. Right now, I'm going to have my Chaka Khan moment, and since we're doing the gospel, remember we had Outkast, right? Now we're going to have Chaka Khan doing Through the Fire, but she's going to do it in a little gospel way, so check it out.
I
Yes, that was Chaka Khan, my girl. Oh, my God, I love Chaka Khan. I'm going to post a picture later on. Remember a couple of shows ago, I had my friend Wanda Tidline on, who knows Chaka Khan, Ledisi, and this one and that one, and she was talking about how Ledisi started. She's a booking agent for the stars and whatnot, and she recently posted a picture of herself with Chaka. And I told her I'm gonna Photoshop. I'm going to learn Photoshop so I can Photoshop myself into the picture and then just pretend like I was there. You know, my goodness, like being one degree of separation from Chaka Khan. I guess, you know, it's for a reason, because I don't know how to act when a woman is in my presence anyway. But we're going to move on to another R&B singer doing a little spiritual something. Check this out. Jill Scott, Hear My Cry.
Here I am again, asking questions, waiting to be moved. I am so unsure of my perception, what I thought I knew. I don't seem to. Where is the turn so I can get back to what I believe in? Back to the old me and God. Please hear my call. I am afraid for me. And they changed. I am but a child to your vision, standing in the cold and the rain, lost here in the dark. I can't see my foot to take a step. What is happening? Oh, this hurts so bad, I can hardly breathe. I just wanna leave. So God, please hear my call. I am afraid for me. Love has burned me wrong. I need your healing. God, please hear my call. I am afraid
Yes, that was Jill Scott. Mika Ray wanted me to let you all know that she is okay. She actually, her doorbell rang and her dog started barking, and I guess it got a little crazy in the Ray household. So Mika's all right. We love you, Mika, and we'll talk to you later. And right now we're going to play another song by a couple of R&B artists who got together, and y'all going to love this. This is Kem, Patti LaBelle, and Ron Isley.
When your brother can't be found, You can call on
you. You don't know like I know.
You can call on Jesus. Heavenly Father.
Yes. You gotta love that. You gotta feel that. Play one more. This one is by our sister, Monifa. Yeah, you know Monifa. Yes, yes, yes. That was my girl, Monifa. Hey, Mo. Still waiting to hear from you, baby. All right. So right now we're going to get ready for the Archbishop's call-in. And in order to do that, what I would like to do in preparation is play a song that you may or may not have heard. Now, if you've been in the event, on the event page that I created on Facebook, then you might have seen the video. You might have heard it. This is a song from 1974 when Archbishop Carl Bean was singing with a group called Universal Love. He's been consistent throughout the years. This song is called All We Need Is Love. Archbishop Carl Bean, what a beautiful, amazing human being to be able to start to create the Unity Fellowship movement, Liberation Theology. There must be tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, and I might even go on to say millions of people who either directly or indirectly have been affected by this man's yes. For me personally, with him saying yes, I was able to find out that God loves me just the way I am. Being a lesbian did not stop God from loving me, because that's the way God created me and intended me to be. And through that, I've been able to use all my talents, and not only for the LGBT community, but for the Black community, for every community that I'm a part of, that yes, God is love and love is for everybody. I could go on and on and on about all of the wonderful things that he's done for the AIDS movement. We all know that he's done so many things as an activist, and just how the church has spread across the country. What I'm going to do right now is just bring him on, and we're all so very, very fortunate to have him with us. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, I'd like to introduce to you Archbishop Carl Bean.
Good morning, everyone. How are you?
We are fabulous. How are you?
I'm fine. Enjoying our California weather.
Yes. What's the temperature? Just to let you know, right? Let us all know and be jealous. What's your temperature out there?
Well, for the last couple of days, we've had summery 80s, 70s, 80s days. One day it was really hot, like midsummer, but you know that's because the weather has been crazy worldwide of late.
Yeah.
So, but it's shirt sleeve weather here.
Yes. Yeah. So let me. You know, I'm still a little delayed with all of this technology here, and I was searching for it as we were talking, but I want to thank you so much for coming on. I had to give you your hand claps, Archbishop.
I'm glad to be on. I really am.
And, you know, I apologize again for the mishaps during the first show, but I'm just excited.
No, that's technology. You know, I left home at 16, taking the Greyhound to Port of Authority there in New York, and been singing. I sang and performed and acted my whole life. So glitches in technology is nothing new to me. So it was the norm for me.
Yes, yes. So, of course, we have a lot of questions for you.
Yes.
And the first question I want to ask, usually I start asking questions about how people were as children. So as a child, were you a particularly religious child? Were you, like, how were you, I don't know, brought up in terms of church and God? What were your beliefs?
I consider myself very fortunate. In the early 50s, my dad was a sanitation worker, and we lived in what is known as East Baltimore. It's the same neighborhood that they often write about the youth of Billie Holiday on the east side near the actual waterways there. And it was pre-integration. We're talking, I think we moved west in 51. I was about 6 or 7 years old. And the city had decided to broaden the street. And therefore, they had to give the Black families the going rate for the property. And it caused my dad to have a leg up. And we moved west, because Dad had this opportunity. And in doing that, a lady knocked on my parents' door and asked if she could take the child to Sunday school. And my mom said yes, because we were new to that side of town and really didn't know people. But what I didn't know is God was getting ready to direct my life in a path that I would not have known had that not happened. Her brother-in-law was a new minister at a church called Providence Baptist. His name is Reverend Marcus G. Wood. He's in his 90s now. And he had been one of the few students at the time that had been chosen from black schools. He had gone to Virginia Union and to Morgan, I believe. And Crozier Theological Seminary was in, I believe, Chester, Pennsylvania then. And they had decided to offer space to, I think it's 11 black students across America who were interested in ministry. Reverend Wood was one of those, and one of the others was Martin Luther King. So Reverend Wood knew Martin as Mike. He called him Mike King, and that's how my church got to know him. So Reverend Wood was one of those 11 guys selected, went to this theological setting where they were challenged, of course, around God and the concept of God, religion. They were given freedom to ask about all the things that they might have wanted to do inquiry on, and to read some of the best, I guess, voices of the time around theological issues. Reverend Wood was then called, when he left as a graduate student, I think the year before Dr. King, coming to Baltimore. That's when his sister-in-law was trying to get Sunday school kids. So it put me in an environment very different from what the average young person in the black church would have experienced. We were encouraged to read. We were encouraged to think, to ask questions, and we were told that nothing was off the table, nothing was considered stupid. So that gave me an opportunity to be in an exciting environment of the mind at a very young age. And because of it, I was introduced to God as a loving concept, and I never heard those derogatory, homophobic messages. That never came across our pulpit. Also, it was a time when, you know, the black community did that thing around the Tallentin 10th or not darker than a paper bag kind of syndrome. And most of them were of a lighter hue, but they didn't live what that was supposed to mean. They were very loving, very kind, because they, quote, were lighter and had, quote, what we used to say, good hair. But they had great hearts, so I also didn't experience that in that particular environment at Providence. Reverend Wood, Aunt Betsy, his wife, Mrs. Wood, were just wonderful people, and they all accepted little Carl, who was darker. And so that just never came into play. We had journalists in the church. We had pre-teachers in the church. Mrs. Smith, my music, over the music when I was a young boy, Baltimore Public Schools, she was head of the music division in Baltimore Public Schools in the black schools. And in her school, Douglas High, they had a music curriculum to prepare kids for college or places like Juilliard or Peabody there in Baltimore. So my first solo in church was not a gospel song. We did Fred Waring and the Pennsylvanians the night before Christmas for that holiday season, and I was given a young male soprano boy alto solo that's in that suite that's on the record. So the first time I sang publicly in the church, it was a part in the night before Christmas. In my junior choir, we were singing infamous anthems and things of that nature, and we didn't sing gospel, but we did sing a cappella Negro spirituals. So I was in a very rich academic kind of environment from a young boy, and we were all being prepared for whatever we felt our careers would be. So that was the church environment. Also in that environment, I was placed in the Jackie Robinson Youth Council of the NAACP at the age of 7. So we were very involved in the struggle for freedom for our people, and we were instructed that we had a part to play, and we were taught that they would spit on us, they would take water, throw it at us, and say, that will probably be spittle, and you will be called these names, and they would do that and train us and walk us around chairs in the basement so that we wouldn't react in anger. So that was my early childhood church environment, which was, I'm sure, preparing me for what I would have to do later in life.
That's just amazing. I actually saw, I believe, like documentaries around children who, or young people who were trained not to react during the, you know, the civil rights movement time and in those days. And, you know, I'm just wondering, as you, because you, it's true that you've always been out.
Yes.
So during your time at Motown, you were out.
Yes.
And they
I never experienced being or needing to be something other than who I am. You know, often when I hear these stories about how homophobic Black America is, or the Black community, is why I say I have to write again or some way, do a doc or something, because that was not my experience. I remember very, very young seeing a drum major head up the Elks Marching Band when I was very young, and he was extremely feminine, but he was excellent at baton twirling. And I can remember how the whole neighborhood would wait for his particular band, and they would just cheer and yell and walk beside his band just to see him do his antics in front of the band. I remember Billy, when I was pre-kindergarten, would come through the block with these beautiful Marcel waves, and he would dare to wear clothes, colors that men didn't wear then, bright colors, but beautiful clothes, and he certainly was, quote, they would say, that way then. Mm-hmm. But no one picked on any of them or accosted them or fought them. And my family knew Billy's mother, and he would speak, and we spoke. I remember lesbians, a woman, Clara, who was in the whack or the wave. I remember her parents remodeling their basement for her and her lover, and I'm talking early 50s, and they were part of community. We didn't have the word transgender then, but we had, you know, we would say drag queens, but these clearly were transgendered persons. There was Carla and Charlene, and they both did hair. And they were in and out of our relatives' homes because they would do the Black women's hair in their own kitchens. So these persons were in the homes with women's clothes on, talking, laughing, speaking to the kids, and doing Black women's hair, preparing them for church or whatever they had to do. So there was a presence of same-gender-loving people in community. And because segregation was in, there was no concept in the mind of Black people to send the child somewhere else, because there was no other place to go but wherever Blacks were. And there was no such thing as violating a person to the degree of throwing them out of community. There was a sense of true sense of the village in pre-integration and during the time of pre-integration. There was a true sense of that. The stores, many of the stores were owned by Black people. Of course, all of just about everything else in the community was owned by Black, and that wasn't was owned by Jews, and the Jews at that time were coming out of the Holocaust and coming from other countries, and felt a connection to Black families. So I didn't have this homophobic thing. Even when I got to New York, one of the most popular shows at the Apollo every year was the Jewel Box Review, which was a show of men in drag and women in drag, and the thing was to try to guess who the actual woman, there was one woman in the whole show, and you were challenged to try to pick that person out during the show. And the lines around the Apollo on 125th Street would be triple the same as for a James Brown show or something, and it came every year. And black people came out in droves to see the Jewel Box Review. And in those days, they had to be really talented. There was no such thing as lip singing. If they had a person in that show, if they sang Madam Butterfly, they actually sang the aria with the soprano voicing, and each time you'd be surprised because you think it was the woman, and at the end of their time on stage, they'd yank the top off, and you'd see the bare chest, and you would hear, oh my God, because people would be sure that was the woman.
Wow.
And the woman wound up being the person in the male persona who was emceeing the show. This was Harlem, and this was a yearly event at the Apollo. So whether in Baltimore, where I was raised, or in New York in my adolescence, there was a presence of same-gender-loving people, and we were not threatened or fearful. So I always lived being Carl. Before I had language to fit it, I was Carl, and I was accepted among the boys, and I was accepted among the girls. So this real homophobic thing came really when we melded in other cultures and began to adapt some of what was going on around us. But my cousin Carol, when I was a kid, came from Washington. My mother was the woman who did all the cooking for the big holiday dinners. So the Thanksgiving family reunion was in Baltimore at my home. Cousin Carol and Andrew, his lover, sat at the table with all the other couples all of my young years. They never separated them. If they put Cousin Edie and Cousin William side by side as a couple, Carol and Andrew were side by side in that family in the early 50s. It was known that they were gay. They lived together. And so I even saw it in family, and I knew I was that way. So there was just not that sense. And there were other people in my church environment, because the churches that we dealt with were also those churches that were preparing their kids for higher education, to sing opera, to model, all those things that were big dreams at that time for black people. But we boys knew like-minded is what we would say then. We knew people, the other boys that were like us, and we would fraternize and talk and share with each other. And certainly people like Ms. Smith, being head of the music division in Baltimore Public Schools for black people, there were many black music instructors in the school system who were gay men that Ms. Smith would have come and help with the Easter cantata or the Christmas special. Or if we went to visit Ms. Smith, often they would be present. So I didn't get that idea of I was odd or something different or so bad that it couldn't be tolerated. I learned that after leaving my childhood environment.
Right. And here it is. You came up with, who wrote Born This Way? Who wrote that song?
A New York hairdresser. Her name was Bunny Jones, and a young man who was a good friend. I'm not sure how they became writing partners, but Bunny was a young woman in Harlem with beauty salons. And, of course, she had a lot of gay men in her environment and working for her. And out of what she, I guess, would hear their personal stories, because she befriended them, She says that's what began to challenge her around wanting to say something publicly. So she and this guy, Chris Spira, wrote the lyric. They first cut it on a guy named Valentino, and I guess at that he was from Broadway, so he had kind of a Broadway sound. And Motown did it, but they created this label called Gaiee, G-A-I-E-E. And for some reason, it didn't do well, or whatever Mr. Gordy expected to happen with it. And Stevie Wonder played piano on it, what have you. But it sounded very Broadway-ish, and I think it did better in London. And that may have been like 74 or 75. And I guess Mr. Gordy, being an entrepreneur in the way that he was, disco began to happen. He felt it could be much bigger. And he came, he said, he found me and signed me, and that's how that happened.
Wow.
So I always think or know that it was meant for me to do because it was so out of the ordinary, especially with the largest black record company ever to be known in the world. And they were known to be Detroit kind of guys, street guys. You would never have thought that that would have been the vehicle for that song to become public. But with me, he put it on Motown and on the label itself, and they really pushed it. Frankie Crocker broke it in Harlem first on the Frankie Crocker station there, and others began to do the same. So the song came to me. But when I look back on my life, just being in the Jackie Robinson Youth Council of the NAACP, being nurtured by, and I must call Lily Jackson's name because Miss Jackson was in charge of the NAACP in Baltimore then, and she for years had the largest branch in the country. It is now the home of the national office in Baltimore these days. But Miss Jackson was another pillar in preparing me to be a student of the mind, number one, challenging me to do what was necessary to lift our people. And she certainly knew I was this soft, effeminate kid, but they considered me and several others like me very bright and a big part of the future for our people. So that song, I believe, was meant for me to do. Because when Motown signed me, he simply heard my voice from that very album that you played. The first mm-hmm. time I signed with the label, it was ABC Records, and I wrote all those songs, and Lee Young Sr., who had been the drummer for Nat King Cole, became inside man in the industry. He left performing. Mr. Gordy hired him from ABC, and the story is that one day he was playing that album and Mr. Gordy was walking through the halls, heard my voice and something I was squalling, and obviously went in Lee's office and said, "Who is that?" And Lee said, "That's Carl Bean from Baltimore, blah, blah, blah." And Mr. Gordy said, "I want him." And that's how that happened. They actually called me on the phone at my little part-time job, and I hung up on them four times because I didn't believe it was Motown. And they had to actually send a messenger with their stationery for me to accept it really was Motown and not some of my friends in the business playing a cruel joke. I said some horrible things as I slammed the phone down because I said, "I don't need this. I want to get out of this darn job and y'all playing. I don't have time for this today." But it was really Motown. So
wow.
That's how I got that. But again, that was spirit. It was what I was supposed to do. Because when I got the lyric, I was shocked. I was like, whoa.
I know.
And I knew it was for me to do. Friends said, "Oh, no, don't sing that. You'll never sing again in the business," and yada, yada, yada. But I knew when I got that lyric, and because of the very history I just shared with you, I knew it was mine to do. So there was no hesitation on my part. And I rewrote it at the mic, really. I didn't sing any of the stuff about dancing and shaking your butt and glitter balling. I basically went in my head and the things I learned about freeing our people and the way I had sung to sing gospel and to do vamps, I basically, that's what I did in the studio and took it, like in pop, they'll say, let's go to church. I took it to church. Luckily, Motown farmed it out to Philadelphia International. So the music you hear is MFSB from Philly. They sent Ron Kersey from the Tramps into L.A. to supervise the session that night. And since Ron was used to voices like Teddy Pendergrass and Eddie Levert, big voices, he didn't ask me to back up from the mic or not sing with all the fervor. He knew what to do, and it was God's hand in all of it. So he basically took over the session and did it that night. I asked him to bring in my friends, the Sweet Inspirations, who I'd been singing with in New York from a young gospel kid, and because I knew they would feed off me and I off them. They'd worked with Aretha and all those big hits, and we, Estelle, one of them, and myself had sung in our group, a local group called the Gospel Wonders in Harlem. And so that's the Sweets in the background, and we just turned it into a gospel session, and I just sang out of my heart. And really, all of that stuff that people love from A Little Bitty Boy and Help Me, Lord Help Me Tell the World That I Was Born This Way, all of that is me vamping. Yeah. None of that's her lyric. I just didn't have the wherewithal then. I should have insisted on a writing credit, because what the people fell in love with is the stuff that I created on my feet at the mic.
Exactly. You know what? I'm going to play it right now. So just hold on, okay? Let's let the world hear it, those who may not know it. We're going to play it for you. I Was Born This Way, Carl Bean.
I'm walking through life in nature's disguise. Yeah. You laugh at me and you criticize. Yeah. 'Cause I'm happy, carefree, and gay. Yes, I'm gay. Ain't no fault in the fact I was born this way. Yeah. Now I won't touch you. I'm happy, I'm carefree.
Yes, Lord. Carl Bean singing Born This Way. This is Javon. You're now having brunch in the basement with Javon and with the Archbishop, Carl Bean. Right now we have a caller on the phone who would like to say hi to you. She's been holding basically, I'd say, about an hour and 40 minutes. And
whoa.
Alexis P. Suda?
Yes.
Hey, sweetheart.
Hey.
How's my sister?
I couldn't miss this. I couldn't miss it for the world. I didn't care where I was, what I was doing. I said, I got to call in and say hello to my dad. I got to say hello. And, you know, I love you so much, and I appreciate you so much, and I thank you for always, like, commenting and supporting me and supporting my band. And, you know, you just mean so much to me. And I know I don't get a chance to say it a lot because, you know, I'm on Facebook just in my own little world. But I need you to know that I love you and I appreciate you and I appreciate everything you do for our community. And, you know, I'm so glad that you're in my life and I'm so glad that Unity is a big part of my life and has been a big part of my life for about 20 years now, I think, about 18, 19 years. And I'm just blessed. I love you. And please continue this walk in life because there are so many people that are still lost and still stuck, and they need to hear this message, and they need to know that, you know, there's love for them. There's great love for them. And I know each and every day that, you know, that I still have friends in Unity and I still talk to people in Unity, and I know that the love is there and it's present, and I thank you for that. I really, really do. And, yes, waiting for you an hour is nothing. I'll wait for you a lifetime, and I appreciate you, and I appreciate you, Javon, for having this arena, this platform for this to be heard and known, and I appreciate you both. Thank you.
Well, thank you
so much, daughter. And I just want to say that I'm very, very proud of you and the stance you've taken to be who you are in show business and in the blues. And you're just doing great work, extraordinary work. And all of the greats are signaling to the world that you are one of them. And that just does my heart good because I remember first getting to know you in the New York church in the choir, and when you would share with me what your dreams were and how you wanted to record and what you wanted to do. And they had you sing that particular song once when I was there many years ago.
Yes, with
the choir. And I just love your work. And because of you, I'm a member of the Blues Foundation. And
yes.
I pay my yearly dues, and I vote in all of the contest for the different positions and people winning awards, and I try to keep up with the music, and I certainly keep up with you on your page, and I'm just so, so happy for you, and
you
deserve it. And please kiss your mom and your daughter for me.
Yes, I will.
And we might be working together in the coming years because at least five people have approached me to do something again. And I kept asking God, is this your will? And it seems as if it might be because these producers keep coming at me. And I keep telling them I'm an old man. I'm 70s now. And they seem not to care. And say, your voice needs to be out there, especially now for our people for many reasons. So I think in the coming year, I'm going to kind of say yes to that and see what God has in store.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm so happy. You need to be back out there doing that because Archbishop, I'm telling you, I'm losing my mind up here. I'm losing my earpiece and everything. But, when I listened to Born This Way, like when I first heard it, Empire Roller Disco, Brooklyn, New York, this DJ that was there at before Big Bob was a DJ named Horace, and he played this song, and I was like, what? This isn't new. I mean, it blew my mind. And, like, you know, I was a great skater at that time, and, like, it just took me to a place, and it just took the whole arena. Everybody in there, it just, I mean, they would play the song, I swear, for, like, 20 minutes, mix after mix after mix. It was to the point where how many more times could you mix it? But we never wanted it to end. You know, because the message is tied, not just the music, but it's the message. You got the nerve to criticize? That took me over the edge right there.
That's right.
And I'm telling you, I love you. Please come back. If there's anything that I can do, I am there. I don't care where I am in this world. If I got to pick up the phone and sing it in the phone, I got you.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. I knew something that I haven't told, the call to do this came in Newark, New Jersey, when I was a Bradford singer sitting on the steps one day. Mahalia had just passed, and the gospel singing community was so upset. Alex had once been her pianist, so it really hit him hard. And I was getting this move within to do something, but I couldn't quite figure it out. I knew I was just uncomfortable with the homophobic kind of voices that were in the gospel idiom, and when 85 to 90% of the people were lesbian and gay. And I kept saying, Lord, what is this? What's pulling at me? I don't really want to sing gospel because I don't like the hypocrisy, and you know I'm uncomfortable. And then at the very moment, I remember being so perplexed. I was sitting on the steps in Newark, 149 South A Street. I'll never forget. That was the home of the Bradford Singers. And the Staple Singers came on. They had just, I think, cut I'll Take You There. And I'd worked with them many times in gospel. And here they were on the leading R&B station in Newark with this song. And the man kept playing it over and over. And people kept calling and requesting. And then they played Marvin's What's Going On, and that was it. And I said, okay, God, I got it.
Right.
And that was before they coined it message music, and I knew that was what I was to do. And that's when I told Alex, I got to go. I don't know what this is, but I know I got to go. I had no idea it would be me singing about being gay. I just thought I'd sing about love and peace and stop the war in Vietnam and that kind of thing. But God knew that I was being led down another path,
mm-hmm.
and that's, you know, how that happened. And I just began to follow that vein at the time. Then it started to be called message music. And from that day in Newark, it just kept opening up, opening up, opening up. And I knew it was mine to do, to speak to the world and say, we're your sons, your daughters, your mothers, your fathers, and we are part of the village. And that's really how it happened. And it just kept going on from that night in the studio. And it was clearly the hand of fate leading me, because it's nothing I could have ever even conceptually thought would happen in the broader public at the time.
That's just amazing. That's just amazing. We have a couple of more people that want to say hello to you, Archbishop. Caller 4430, you're holding. Your first three digits are 323.
Hello.
What's your name and where you calling from?
Hi, this is Reverend Russell Thornhill calling from Los Angeles.
Hi, Russ.
Hey, Archbishop, how are you?
I'm good this morning.
Javon, God bless you, my sister, and thank you for having this forum that touches the world and brings Archbishop on to touch the world through this wonderful medium.
Well, thank you for calling in and giving us the blessing of your presence.
Yeah, I just wanted to stop by for a second as we in L.A., myself, Reverend Leslie Burke, and the entire denomination prepare to celebrate a major occasion that took place 70 years ago, and that is the Archbishop's 70th birthday. And he's going to be 70 years old on May 26th, just in a few weeks from now. And in Los Angeles, we're going to have a major celebration on the 25th on that Sunday. And then our denomination is going to have a major event in October to honor him. So I wanted to come on and lift that up. And many people may or may not be aware, 1982, when the Archbishop started the work around HIV and AIDS and opening the church, you know, in those days they did not discuss anything around 501c3s and retirement plans. Their thought in those days was just to how am I going to get to the hospital to visit a brother or sister dying with AIDS. They were planning the next memorial church service for to help a mother get through the loss of her child. They were training and teaching people. Many of us were a part of those trainings, how to cope with AIDS and the losses that were taking place. So in those days, and I'm just going to speak as someone who works with him on a daily basis, he didn't receive any salaries then. There were no retirement funds set aside. That wasn't their thought. It was just everyone from those days, Archbishop and all the people that worked with him, came from a space of love for our people that others were casting out and casting aside. But now in his senior years, as he's in semi-retirement, you know, there's physical and emotional challenges that you may not ever hear about, but I'm going to say that here. And he paid a price for his sacrificial living. So I'm asking you, Javon, and your community and all those folks who love Archbishop, let us come together to be a financial blessing to a man that has given his entire life. You have heard the stories from the very beginning of his life. Let us come together to be a financial blessing to him. And for those who are able to go online to do it, you can go to unityfellowshipchurch.org. That's unityfellowshipchurch.org. And you can click in right there, and that'll go directly into an account for him directly. And for those who would like to send cards and financial blessings through the mail, you could send it to Archbishop Carl Bean, P.O. Box 78342, L.A. 90016. So you can either go online to unityfellowshipchurch.org, or you can send it to Archbishop Carl Bean, 78342. But let us come together to be a financial blessing to a man who has blessed us in so many different ways. So amen. I just wanted to come on and share that for a moment. And Archbishop, on behalf of the L.A. Church and the denomination, we love you. We surround you. We put our arms around you and thank God for your yes. That took place way before 82, a yes that took place way before 1977. Thank God for you. And thank you, Javon, for this moment.
Well, thank you very much. And I second that emotion, everybody. If you are able, please go to the website, the Unity Church Movement website. I will be posting the links on my Facebook pages, my various pages. And yes, let us be a financial blessing to the extent that we can. Those of you who can give thousands of dollars, give thousands of dollars. You will be blessed in multiple ways and for multiple days. For those of you who have a buck to spare, let's do it. If you get 10 people with one buck, that's 10 bucks. So let's do it. Just to say happy birthday, if that's all you got, then do that too, you know? We're going to take another caller, 5032.
Hello.
What's your name and where you calling from?
Hi, this is Cass. How are you, Javon? Calling out of Newark, New Jersey. How you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. I just wanted to briefly speak to Archbishop real quick. I'm actually privileged to have my home church and Unity Fellowship Church of New York City under the loving guidance of Senior Bishop Zachary G. Jones. And I got the privilege to meet Archbishop a couple of years ago when Unity NYC celebrated their 20th anniversary and got a chance to take a picture and everything. But I just wanted to tell you, Archbishop, that thank you so much for your vision, for your inspiration, and for your courage. You know, when you first started Unity, I was about 5 years old. But who'd have knew that I would be a same gender-loving individual and an aggressive or dominant lesbian female who loves to wear suits and bow ties. And so I thank you for, you know, for starting the movement and for making it possible for all those who may have grown up. You know, of course, I grew up as one of Jehovah's Witnesses, so, you know, things were a little hairy and not accepting, but just to know that God loves me for who I am, no matter who I love or who I decide to be with or, you know, just as I am. And just, again, I'd like to thank you for that, for going against all odds, because I'm sure at that particular point in time, even though now it is more accepting and the fact of marriage equality and things of that nature have come such a long way, but I am a firm believer that it is because of your movement and because of your vision and because you saying yes and pushing forward that we have such success now. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you, sweetheart. Thanks for calling in. And I bless you and the New York Church and my first son and my first assistant pastor here in L.A., who was a California baby. So I was shocked when he said yes to wanting to go to New York to plant the church there. And, of course, now it's history, and it opened the way for all of those other ministries that have followed. But I certainly appreciate your calling, and I do love you, and I love the fact that you found freedom, and today you're able to live in that freedom and be who you are. It just does my heart good to hear from the young. As a sidebar, I got a post a couple of days ago from a young man from Britain who said to me, introduced himself, he's 22 years old, he's a British subject, and he's a disc jockey, and he wanted to ask if I could come to London. He said, you probably don't know, but you're an integral part of all of the Gay Pride celebrations in Britain, Ireland, and Scotland. Your record, your song is what comes from most of the floats, and it's been that way years, even before I was born. So these things are coming at me now in my senior year and surprising me how much God did with that tune and how the work of Unity and the work the Lord called me to do is worldwide and touching so many people. And I'm just grateful, really. I'm just grateful because it was those people who touched my life and prepared me, the names I share with you this morning. It was Miss Lily Jackson of the NAACP in Baltimore when I was 7 years old, a guide in my early years. It was Miss Marion Smith at Providence who taught me how to sing from my heart. Miss Smith would sing, and the tears, she was a beautiful soprano, and the tears would just always go down her face and meet under her chin. So I didn't know then I was learning to sing with the heart and to be naked and not be fearful of the feelings and put it in. But it was those people and the great Reverend Wood's first cousin, who was a couple years older, was a man named Proctor, Samuel Proctor, and he's one of the most celebrated names and voices in the history of the black church and black preaching. There are clinics named after him. And I think he went to Crozier maybe a few years before he sent Reverend Wood there. And he was probably one of the first blacks to ever be on that campus. Dr. Proctor was a brilliant mind, and he served as president at Virginia Union University, where I used to go as a youth from Providence. They had something during the summer months similar to what other people would have gone to a camp. They had a Christian youth seminar on the campus of Virginia Union that some of us Baptist kids would attend every summer, and we were engaged.
I was hungry.
I was hungry.
Did you feed me?
Did you feed me?
I was naked.
Naked.
Did you clothe me?
Did you clothe me?
I was homeless.
I was homeless.
Did you house me?
Did you house me?
I was.
Yeah. sheep would be on the right and the goat would be on the left. And they said, Master, how will we know who will win eternal life? He said unto them, when I was hungry, did you feed me? He said, when I was naked, did you clothe me? When I was in prison and sick with AIDS, did you visit me? They said, now, Lord, when did we see you hungry or naked or sick with AIDS and not visit you? He said, remember that little boy that used to play the piano for your church? And when he got sick with AIDS, y'all started talking about it. But yet he played when you didn't have many, and he played when you had a great cathedral. And then he got AIDS, and y'all decided to gossip about him. He said, I was right. Hey, 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 yeah, yeah. I was right when I was hungry. You didn't see me. Told you I had it, and you wouldn't receive me. Bless God Almighty. Then they said, they looked at the ones on the right. Foundation of the world. They said, Lord, how did we make it in the kingdom? What did we do? We didn't go to church every Sunday. We didn't speak in tongues. We didn't dance. We didn't run. I don't know if we ever got the anointing. Why did we make it? Said, when I was home, you fed me. When I was naked, you clothed me.